Next case, Wolf et al. Versus Ford Kennelly et al. Mr. Homer.
Good morning. If it pleases the court, Peter Homer on behalf of the appellants. There are two aspects to this appeal. First, the Seventh Circuit has been very clear about this, that cursory denials of fee motions are not sufficient acts of discretion. The decision of the Szabo case, the Mostly Memories case, stand for those propositions. And the U.S. Supreme Court, in this specific context, where we're dealing with a fee award in a remand motion, has indicated that discretion isn't merely at a whim. It requires a degree of meaningful legal analysis on that. What happened here is that the court, in summarily denying the motion and not even allowing a motion to be filed, in fact, is that there was a mere recitation of a standard which the court, frankly, did not get correct. The words that she used were that it was not clearly improper. That was akin to like a Rule 11 type motion. That's not the applicable standard. The standard is that there had to be an objectively reasonable basis for the removal itself. Here what the district court did was entered a cursory order and, in fact, barred us from moving for an award of attorney's fees, and the only reason they gave was that it was complex. That is not the stuff of which a proper order is made. It is, as the court said in the Mostly Memory case, it's too threadbare. That, standing alone, is an automatic grounds for reversal of the trial court's decision on that. Secondly, the second issue here that we're seeking is an instruction for an award of attorney's fees for an improvident removal under Section 1447C. And this is a case that's squarely within the standards of the Supreme Court decision in Martin and the Seventh Circuit's decision in Lott versus Pfizer, which was written by Judge Fahm. And there has to be an objectively unreasonable removal flying in the face of clearly established authority, and that's what occurred here. So what happened was is that the defendant in this case removed it in the face of two long-time statutory barriers, the form defendant rule, which deals with RCG's Illinois citizenship, and the rule that there must be unanimous consent by the defendants in this case. RCG, in this instance, refused to do that. And this is why it's important, because the appellees here focus in on the fact that RCG had dual citizenship, focuses in their brief so much on the fact that somehow or another that Indiana citizenship mattered, but it wasn't. It was the Illinois citizenship which was dispositive here. It is that citizenship which defeated removal and had nothing to do with Indiana citizenship as it relates to my client. Mr. Kennelly and his attorneys had a letter from RCG saying that RCG wouldn't consent to that, and a later letter from my firm to their counsel in Florida indicating that if there were deficiencies in any attempt to remove, and that if in fact they did so, we would be seeking an award of fees and possibly sanctions. And we specifically raised with them the two substantial impediments that we're talking about here, the statutory barriers to that removal. So to try to get around those two thresholds, Mr. Kennelly asked the court to realign. The problem with that is that he ignored the clearly established authority in this district. The American Motors case, which was decided nearly 30 years ago, set out what is the operative standards. And it isn't as if that decision stands alone by itself. The Kruger decision, which was decided by Judge Kaney, who actually wrote the opinion on that, was decided 16 years ago. The Sheboygan decision was written by Judge Posner 26 years ago, all applying that standard.
He's been here 26 years? That's
arguably 16 years ago for me.
The problem is what they did here is Mr. Kennelly's theory here was that they asked to realign RCG as a plaintiff, because RCG and my client, Mr. Wolf, and his company shared an interest in vacating the arbitration award. And they claimed that was the main dispute in the case. The problem is that is the primary issue test, which, while some circuits utilize it, the Seventh Circuit has never utilized it. And They didn't try to use the actual substantial conflict test, which the Seventh Circuit has applied. And that standard doesn't say that there has to be the most meaningful discrepancy or dispute between the parties. Any conflict, any antagonism will do. And if you look carefully about, you know, this decision, I think, is carefully set forth in the American Motors case, and then just Judge Posner's decision in Sheboygan, in which he goes through and deals with this very issue here, and he says here, such a test has not been applied to subsequent cases. Our circuit's decision in American Motorists, for example, requires an actual substantial conflict, but not that it be over the primary issue in the litigation. And we have expressed our distaste for spongy jurisdictional issues. So, Mr. Kenley.
It sounds like you were right.
Yes, sir. That's a good turn of phrase there. He kept the case alive. Mr. Kennedy kept the case alive for 9 months with an erroneous primary issue argument here. He focused on the points of agreement between RCG and my client rather than looking at what was the antagonism. There was no attempt at the trial court to distinguish the American Motorist case. They didn't ask or make a suggestion below that it should be overturned. And in fact, we believe that they're precluded from making some of the arguments that have been made here. They're making a new argument here. That is that American Motorist, somehow or another, is not a correct recitation of the law in this, that somehow or another we're making some kind of extreme interpretation of that. Our brief sets out those cases which American Motorist cites. They are not all insurance cases. They involve other types of issues. And clearly, it's a standard that is very broad. Mr. Kenley, in his brief here, attempts to minimize our dispute with RCG and to mock the motives of the parties here. But he admits that in his very removal petition that there is a dispute over indemnification, and that in itself was enough to destroy any attempted realignment. The motives that the client had here are really immaterial. What we should be focusing in on is the motives of the party who is seeking to remove. Again, they want to focus in on that, and we can talk if the court wants to hear a little bit about what those motives are. There is also a claim made. Excuse me?
You're into your rebuttal.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Berg?
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kenneth Berg, and I represent Mr. Kennelly. Who is a trailer home park operator in Indiana, a retired individual who is just trying to confirm an arbitration award that was rendered 2.5 years ago. He's trying to confirm an award rendered against RCG at the time it misalleged its citizenship to be only an Illinois citizen, and Mr. Wolf, who is a Florida citizen. Mr. Wolf was found by the arbitrators to have litigated in the arbitration in bad faith. And something has gone terribly, terribly wrong here. Mr. Kenley is still involved in litigation, expensive litigation, just to confirm the arbitration award 2.5 years after it's rendered. He has not collected one penny of that award. And the award includes punitive damages against Mr. Wolf, who was before this court. That award now has been confirmed by the state court, and Mr. Wolf is appealing the confirmation of that award. But in this appeal, Mr. Kennelly's position is that he had an objectively reasonable basis for removing this case, that the district court did not abuse its discretion when it denied Mr. Wolf's request to shift fees under Section 1447, and that the record before this court is adequate to affirm the district court's decision. First, with respect to the district court's denial of attorney's fees, it did not abuse its discretion. It applied the correct legal standard. When we were before the court in April of 2008 on that issue, Mr. Kennelly had cited the cases we all agree apply, the Supreme Court case in Martin and this court's decision in Lott. And under those cases, there is no presumption of attorney's fees. Attorney's fees are discretionary with the district court, and an award of fees is not automatic. The district court stated, and this is in the record at tab 10, page 2, line 21, that she found that removal was not clearly improper. That's a clear reference that the district court was applying the test in Lott versus Pfizer that says no attorney's fees should be awarded unless the law clearly foreclosed removal. The district court found that removal was not clearly improper. Secondly, if anything, the judge applied an overly generous standard in favor of Mr. Wolf. The court said at page 2, line 19, even if fee shifting is the norm, and we know in a 1447 case it's not the norm, but she said even if it were the norm, I wouldn't award fees here because this case is, quote, exceptional. And what did the judge mean by that? That's a reference to the standard, the test in the Supreme Court case Martin versus Franklin, which says absent unusual circumstances, attorney's fees should not be awarded in a removal case where the remover has an objectively reasonable basis for removing. And those circumstances, those unusual circumstances here, were many. First of all, one of the parties had misalleged its citizenship and continued to do so for 9 months afterwards, even though Mr. Kennelly relied on that misallegation. Mr. Kennelly correctly alleged that it was a citizen of Illinois, RCG was a citizen of Illinois based on its members, and that was never denied for 9 months by RCG. So in the face of that unusual circumstance, and that's one which the court in Martin specifically says can be looked to by the district court to determine whether fees should be shifted. So in the face of that, she was commenting, she found that there were exceptional circumstances here which did not favor awarding attorney's fees. This court, the Seventh Circuit, has rejected the position in other circuits that a denial of attorney's fees always must be accompanied by a written opinion. And we've cited cases in our brief where this court has affirmed denials of attorney's fees even though there was no written opinion. Now, with respect to whether Mr. Kennelly had a reasonable, an objectively reasonable basis for removal, he certainly did so. At the time of removal, it appeared that the declaratory action for indemnification, which is what my opponents argue prevents removal, it appeared that that action was not a real controversy, that it was a sham, that there was only one real controversy, and that was the validity of the arbitration award, and that Mr. Wolf and RCG were cooperating or perhaps even colluding to deny Mr. Kennelly's access to federal court. Accordingly, he called RCG prior to removal to ask whether they would consent to removal. He fully expected that RCG would consent to removal. Why? Because RCG had already filed an action in federal court contesting the validity of the arbitration award. RCG did not include in that action a claim of indemnification against Mr. Wolf, and so he expected RCG to consent. Instead, the letter that my opponents rely on, where they say that they're not consenting and they said Mr. Kennelly should have therefore just capitulated and never removed, in that letter, RCG directs Mr. Kennelly to speak to Mr. Homer, to Mr. Wolf's attorney, as to whether RCG should consent to removal. It certainly appeared to Mr. Kennelly reasonably that they were coordinating their efforts to prevent his access to federal court. Not only that, but RCG had no reason not to consent to removal since it had already filed its case here in federal court. Accordingly, Mr. Kennelly removed the case from state court, Mr. Wolf's case from state court, docket number 2218, and he argued that RCG should be realigned from a defendant to a plaintiff, leaving Mr. Kennelly as the only real defendant in the action. Under that proper alignment, he cited the Supreme Court case of City of Indianapolis for the proposition that the district court has a duty to look beyond the pleadings and align the parties according to the controlling actual interests in the litigation. And here that meant that the proper alignment should be Mr. Wolf and RCG against Mr. Kennelly. That would have created complete diversity based on the facts known at the time. It obviated any problem with the forum defendant rules. He also cited this court's decision in First National Bank versus Ettlinger for the proposition that a nominal defendant, such as Mr. Kennelly believed RCG was here, should be disregarded and need not consent to removal and should not have a veto power over a removal. For 6 months, the district court agreed with Mr. Kennelly that there was a basis for diversity jurisdiction and continued with the case. In fact, at the very first hearing where this issue was considered in June 2007, the American Motorist case was raised by the Wolf parties. The district court considered it and continued to believe that there was a basis for diversity jurisdiction. And the reason was that we contended all along, and the district court agreed for 6 months, that there was only one real dispute, the validity of the arbitration award. Accordingly, American Motors, which deals with the case where there's two disputes, it didn't apply. We weren't saying that it should be overruled. We weren't saying that there should be a weighing by the district court of this cause of action versus that cause of action. We were saying there was only one real dispute, and as to the one real dispute, there was a proper alignment where there was complete diversity based on the facts known at the time. In fact, 3 months later, in September of 2007, the transcript of the hearing before the district court on this issue again shows that she continued to believe that there was only one real dispute. The district court said, this is at tab 4 of the appendix, page 5, lines 5 and 10, quote, she characterized the relationship between RCG and Mr. Wolf as, quote, allegedly adverse, and they claim to be adverse. It's clear that even in September 2007, the district court did not believe that there was a real dispute between Mr. Wolf and RCG. Suddenly, the district court reversed itself in December 2007. After 9 months, it believed that there were two real disputes. It believed that American Motors applied, and that was all based on the fact that suddenly RCG came clean and announced that it had one member who lived in Indiana who owned 0.1%, a fact that Mr. Kennelly could never have known. He did a pre-filing investigation and determined that there were no members of record on public that lived in Indiana. And so once RCG made this disclosure, all of a sudden the district court saw the case differently, and she decided there was no jurisdiction. She dismissed both the 1421 case and the other. In conclusion, the Martin versus Franklin case says that attorney's fees under 1447 are appropriate only where there's evidence in the record the remover has an interest in prolonging the litigation. There's no evidence that Mr. Kennelly has an interest in prolonging the litigation. Mr. Wolf does. We ask that you affirm the district court's decision.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Mr. Homer?
The facts decided by the arbitrator don't excuse an improper removal. It is Mr. Kennelly who decided to improperly remove the case. It was Mr. Kennelly who decided to ignore the American Motors case. And it is they that decided to fight for 9 months. The delay that he's complaining about here was in large part created by Mr. Kennelly on this. And it is, you know, that is one of the ironies that they're making the arguments here. The other problem with
What about his argument, Mr. Homer, that the district judge didn't recognize until late in the 10 or 11 months that it was clearly established law would have precluded removal?
Your Honor, I think if you look carefully at one of the very earliest transcripts where the judge indicated that she had an inclination to rule and deny the motion for remand, local counsel stood up and said, but Your Honor, that flies squarely in the face of American Motorist, and she said, I'm aware of that decision. It's troubling. I've got to take that into account. And so what the judge did over a series of hearings was really at the behest of the other side, where they kept on injecting these other issues, she kept on sort of going through and dealing with this serial arguments that were being made by the other side. I don't think
American Motors then never surfaced further argument about it being determinative didn't surface.
American Motorist surfaced it every turn with the judge. That was the primary argument that was being made, which is that they couldn't demonstrate the ability for realignment. Your Honor, and then also on this issue, they did not – did you have another question?
No, no.
Sorry. They did not apply – she did not apply the correct standard here in terms of an award of fees. She said that her finding was is that it was not clearly improper, which is akin to a type of a Rule 11 motion. The standard which is asked to be announced and there has to be a rationale for it is was there an objectively reasonable basis for it? And she used the wrong standard, and yes, counsel can cite to those cases from the Seventh Circuit that say that they don't have to have a rationale given in every case, but those are cases where the motion itself is frivolous. The other argument in here is they try to confuse both the trial court and this court about citizenship here. The case which was brought by RCG was a completely different case. The remand and the removal issues were the ones that were in the case which was brought by Mr. Wolf here. It is the Illinois citizenship that posed a problem for them. It is not the Indiana citizenship on this. The other argument, which I think they're belatedly making on appeal here, is somehow or that there is a sham, a collusion, and they have not and they cannot satisfy the standard for fraudulent joinder. They haven't done that. So under those circumstances, there was no ability to state a claim here for proper removal. We would ask that there be a remand that's appropriate with that.
Thank you, Mr. Homer. Thanks, Mr. Berg. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement, and the court will stand in recess.